So our next presenter is Naomi Anderson, and Naomi is an epidemiologist with the Washington State Department of Labor and Industries Safety and Health Assessment and Research for Prevention, the SHARP program. Naomi works on a variety of occupational health surveillance projects that collect, analyze, and publish occupational health data for Washington, including occupational asthma, hospitalized burns, CSD occupational health indicators, and the Washington BRFSS. So welcome, Naomi.
Thank you. As Kathleen graciously introduced me, I'm an epidemiologist and I do surveillance. I'm not a graphic designer, so this is not going to be a very technical presentation or demonstration of software or a course in design principles. It's just sharing a little bit about what we have learned and done in Washington State. I want to acknowledge my co-author of this, Christina, who helped make the infographic. She put a ton of work into it. She couldn't be here. First of all, why make an infographic? It's a graphic. An infographic is a visual representation of data or knowledge that you want to present so that you can give complex information quickly, clearly. The human brain, our visual system, we can pick out and identify patterns and trends very well visually, and that's faster than maybe reading a technical report or something like that. And we wanted to reach a wider audience. As talked about in the last presentation, everyone is on social media, everything is shareable, and we want to tap into that and find access to that wider audience. SHARP in Washington, we decided to convene a communications work group to kind of identify our needs, what we're doing well, what we're doing wrong, and we decided we're going to work on an infographic. And the communications group is really good because it's a mixed group of ages, different careers, gender, education level, and so we're hoping to use that to make these infographics and other products less technical and more focused on non-research, non-academic types. So why did we decide on logging? Because especially in Washington, we have the logging industry, both manual and mechanized. It's long historically established. It has a high cultural value and economic value to the state. But manual logging in particular has high injury rates and fatalities. And so this led to the creation of the Logger Safety Initiative. If you have questions, you can ask Dave Venato about that. But it's really trying to reduce and prevent these injuries and fatalities by creating more safety culture. Okay, so what is an infographic? Has anyone made an infographic? I know I talked to some people earlier who have in the past. Not that many. Is anyone thinking about using these in the future? And I talked to Sarah, a couple people in the audience. So this slide talks about what an infographic is. And like all slides that are full of words, it's kind of really boring. And it'd be really boring if I just read this slide to you. So here's an infographic about infographics. A meta-infographic, if you will. So one of the things to keep in mind when designing an infographic is, in this culture, we read top to bottom, left to right. And so you want to think about your data flow. And if you follow this, it's really busy. It's really colorful. But if you start back there where it says research, I'm supposed to point with the cursor. I don't know if I can. Where it says research, you need this data, and then you need the design. And then it goes on to talk to you about some of statistics about people who have been making them, what colors do they use, what are the topics, how are they shared, what's some of their history, what representation elements are used. So this is a quote, or a long quote, from Tufte, who's kind of the famous person of visual display, of data visualization or data viz, information design or information architecture. So he talks a lot about how you can make all these data pieces to show a lot quickly and clearly. He has a lot of books and seminars. He has some interesting ideas, not all practical for state-based surveillance. This is a historical infographic, what Tufte calls the best statistical graphic ever drawn. And it's great because it conveys a lot of information very quickly. This was made in 1869, so historical. All you need to know about this is that it's Napoleon's march to Moscow, and that thick band that starts out over here is the size of the army as it goes and then returns. Oops. So even if you don't know anything about history or this campaign of 1812, you can look at that knowing it's the size of the army and you can tell me how it goes. You don't need to know anything else. This is another old one, I think it's 1857 or 1856, by Florence Nightingale. She was known for being a nurse, but she's also the first female member of the Royal Statistical Society, so she's kind of a badass. She's credited with creating this pie chart variation called a polar area diagram. And it compares the magnitude and burden of different sources of mortality in the army. And so these bluish-gray ones here are preventable diseases. And the black ones, all others. And the red is ones from wounds in battle. So this was sent to the Queen and Parliament. The Queen is not going to read your statistical report. She's too busy. But she might look at a picture like this and be able to say, hey, look at those big blue wedges. That's a huge burden of mortality. That's preventable. So infographics are supposed to show and not tell. So here's one. You can skip watching three seasons of Star Trek, or you can, because it's fun. But even if you haven't watched it, you can learn a lot from this infographic. You can see that there's some kind of vehicle, some monsters, robots, aliens, and also some love. So you just learned a lot about Star Trek in 1 second without a lot of comment. Here you can tell that this infographic is telling you something about hearing loss, ears, and it has a nice spiral shape, kind of like the cochlea, and it has a progression of hearing loss. And it's supposed to lead you to a conclusion, which if you look down towards the bottom here, right here, it's for an earplug store. So they want you to prevent hearing loss, but they also want you to buy earplugs or expensive noise-canceling headphones. This one gives you a lot of information, and the action it wants you to do is to buy more wine for your dinner party. But you can learn a lot from it. So I show those as two examples of why it can be useful for occupational health. These bullet points here are from a presentation on nonprofits using infographics, down at the bottom. And we face some of the same challenges. We might not be seeking donations, but we want to show the need for our programs. We want to show the impact that we have, show the data from our report, in a format that someone will actually look at and see, and our impact of services. So we're really good at the data part of infographics. Like all this, during these past few days of the conference, we have so much data. We have so many data sources, we don't even know what to do with them all. But we might be a little bit behind on the design in some cases. So these pictures are from a presentation in an article in Wired. And it shows the way that an artist would conceptualize from a drawing using the data and then make it into an infographic. So I brought our original drawing of the logging infographic. I don't know if you can see it. You might pass it out. Maybe not. It's really ugly. So this was in our communications, me and Christina. We were brainstorming and we were drawing what we wanted for the logging infographic that we're going to make. And we started out, we know it has to have a tree because it's logging. And then we have some roots and a chainsaw and a feller buncher and some stumps. And then all the things we think we're going to put on it. Needless to say, it does not look like that. But that's how it started out. So a little bit about design. Start sketching. Get the markers out. This is from a resource that we have. It's a book, really little, not expensive. You can get Design Basics Index, and it just talks about easy ways to get a good design crash course. Your components, what are the visual elements that you have? How are you composing them? What's the concept? For us, we knew it was logging. We knew kind of the things that we wanted in there. There's lots of these resources like this that you can find on the internet for free that give you some design principles. Color palette, what looks good online. I was talking to Marie earlier. She brought up red-green color blindness. Like, oh, we should have thought of that. We use a lot of green. But these are all things that you can find resources on online that will help you find good colors. Also, you want to think about your data. Is it interesting? What's the function? How is it going to be shared? And things like that. And also, what's your audience? Where is this going to go? What data do you have? So there's lots of flow charts and things like that you can find online to kind of narrow down what you want to do. And as Sarah talked about, there's different platforms, and different things are appropriate for different platforms. But an infographic or a link to that can be shared across platforms, so it's pretty good. And you want to avoid, hopefully, some of the pie charts, the bar graphs that we're so good at. The APHA infographic here has, it's a food theme for obesity. And so that one's really good. It's a little long, though. Like, I couldn't put the whole thing in because you just scroll and endless. So that's also a thing you need to keep in mind. Where is the hook that people are going to look at? They're not going to scroll down to the very bottom of something necessarily, but they might. This is good because it's very orange. So you get that safety orange, hazard orange, and it has a forklift on it, so you know exactly what it's about. Vector-borne diseases. This could have been a bulleted list that you just handed out, just bullet points, but it looks very nice and clear as an infographic. We also want to make sure that we avoid some pitfalls, like manipulating the data to show different relationships in scale or magnitude. That's very easy to do. And avoid sales pitch ad one as state agencies. We don't want to do that. So this is the first one we made in Sharp, was the tires feedback survey. And this is easily made using a PowerPoint template, drag and drop. And so this is very easy to do. You can download them on the internet. But if you like to do things the hard way, you can make them yourself, the elements, the graphics. And so for that, you need some software to make vectors, which are an image format that doesn't lose clarity as it's scaled up or down, like a bitmap would. So to do this, we used Inkscape, which is a free and open source software. You could also use Adobe Illustrator or CorelDRAW, but those have fees and licensing limitations. And so what did we have for logging data? We had lots and lots of data, and here's what the table looked like. This is what ends up in the finished version, but much prettier. For those of us who have a statistical background, you can look at this and be like, oh, I can see differences. But a lot of people faced with a table of numbers will zone out. So this is what Inkscape, if you start and open a document, will look like. It's just this blank screen. And some of your more important tools would be the select arrow up here at the top. And then right below it is path or node tool. And with that, you can do a lot of things very easily once you learn some of the basics. And I'm going to talk a little bit about tracing objects, importing a picture, which you can do, it's very easy, and then tracing it. So, for instance, this is a picture that was traced, and I show this gray one because you can see it has some kind of wavy, weird lines, but that's a function of tracing, and you can get rid of that when you apply some filters and effects. And the first time you do it, it might look terrible, but keep going. So for this, if you want to trace something, an easy way is if you import a picture. So this is a Wikimedia Commons public domain image that you can use. And we really wanted this logging hard hat with its distinctive shape. And so you import the picture, and then you can try and automatically trace the bitmap, which it has that function, which is the easiest way. So if you have any plain clip art that you have that you can use, it'll automatically trace things very easily. This takes a little more time because it had this background, so it wouldn't just take out the helmet very easily. But you can trace by hand if you use, you go up to object and you turn the object into a path, and then you can select things and trace by hand. And if you learn that, you can make an almost unlimited, probably unlimited number of vectors very quickly and quite easily with a little bit of practice. So, and then we put the little hat shape onto a clip art of a man, and you have an instant logger. And that didn't take, took longer to find that picture than it did to trace a picture that we could use than to make the little shape. And that is one of the caveats. You have to look at where you're getting the picture, what are the licensing requirements. You can buy some pictures or some pre-made vectors on sites like ThinkStock or iStock Photo, but you also have to look into the requirements and the licensing. Some of them are very cheap, but they can be more expensive. But if you're in a niche occupation like logging, there's no Feller Buncher vectors that are pre-made, So you kind of have to make that, that's right here down at the bottom, you have to make that yourself. And we have lots of logging pictures, so we were able to do that. And this just shows like a chainsaw clip art easily turned into a vector. So here's the final infographic that went out. And I have a volunteer to hand out some copies. Oh, or it's available on our website, and I'll put up my contact information as well. But if you want to get a list of the resources and references that I use, I'll show them at the end. I won't have time to go through them all, but I can email you a document that has all those links, and then you can explore further on your own. So this went out to the executive management team of the Department of Labor and Industries, and it went to the Logger Safety Initiative members, and that includes business owners, landowners, different safety people. And it also went out in our newsletter. So as you can see, it looks very different than the drawing that we originally started with. We cut out a lot of the stuff that we were going to have on there because there was just too many things. And we also got a lot of input from the communications team. People see things very differently, older people, younger people. And so it was really a team process to finalize what things went on and where. So it's always good to get a few extra looks at it. If you learn the tracing and importing, you can use these vectors in all sorts of ways. And this is from a tree trimming injuries poster that was presented earlier this year at NWARS by Christina and Randy, and Randy Clark and Todd Schoonover from our Washington State FACE program. And Christina made these vectors. These were traced and imported from pictures. She made the ladder herself and the little man dragging brush herself as well. And so you can use these once you get the basic concepts down to make a fun poster or put it in a document or spice up your PowerPoint or whatever you're going to use it for. So you have a lot of freedom. Here's what it looks like when you're working on things in Inkscape. This is, I made a poster for work-related injuries and janitorial services. And so you can represent certain things with traditional pie charts, as well as scaling objects to represent different proportions of. So these little cupboard and drawers are percentages of languages spoken, other language other than English. And that's what that poster looks like. So again, the use of vectors. I used that to make the background and the trees and all the people. And so you can use it for a lot of different applications across programs. So some of the resources, if you're interested in using Inkscape, it has a really great user community that has all sorts of people all over the world who are developing and modifying it. There's so many free tutorials, so that while it has a steep learning curve, you can definitely work on free tutorials, a wide variety of, on all sorts of subjects. And there's lots of places that you can find guidance on color palettes, where to find examples. One of the best ways is just look for other infographics and see what you like and what you don't like, and then work on those principles. You can look at Pinterest boards, hashtag infographic on Twitter, look at blogs. The New York Times publishes a lot, The Economist publishes a lot of infographics, to find ones that you like and get inspired from there. You can also, for getting clip art, since we no longer have Word clip art, you can image search, and you can limit those searches by licensing on Bing. You can look at government photos. A lot are free. There's lots of sites that offer free images or vectors that are pre-made. Some you may have to register from. There's other options that let you drag and drop to easily create infographics. Again, you may have to register. Not all are free, and you have to check with your agency as to what you can or cannot use. So those are the references. So questions or comments? No.
I guess I have one.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I don't know. I was just wondering. I don't even really know how to ask questions. But like, is there guidance for, like, you have like three people, and then multiple people. So they're guided for like how to make your data into quantified.
Well, that's because there was 3 fatalities on one side and 28 on the other.
Oh, okay. So you actually have 28 people represented if you count the numbers?
Supposedly.
You made a comment about like making sure that you're not misrepresenting the data.
Right.
With the size of the image or something like that. So I don't know. As you get into this, I'm just wondering if you've learned any principles or have guidelines, or if you just sort of like play with it and see what feels right.
I think you want to stay true to what the data says. So if there's 3 versus 28, you don't make like 100 people on one side and 3 on the other. Marie?
So it's really, it's a labor of love when you're doing an infographic. It is not, you know, it may look simple, but it's actually very, very difficult because you really need to hone down to figure out what is that one message you want to illustrate, because if you make it too messy, then nobody's going to read it. So you really have to think very carefully about what that message is and how you represent it. I think you've gone through it. That's a big issue. And you did a great job. Thank you.
It's so very comprehensive what you and Christina undertook. Does this mean now everybody's going to come to you both? Like within your group, are you now like the...
Possibly.
Process you might have used for pilot testing it or showing it to people and getting, you know, feedback on whether they got what you wanted them to get out of it?
Sure. The way that we pilot tested it partially was probably not as formal of that term as that, but we did go through it in our communications group and had some brutal critiques that changed quite a bit of things. And we also had people take it home to their friends and family who were not researchers to see if they could understand what we were trying to say, to compare the difference in magnitude between the manual and the mechanized logging and the great burden. And so we did change some things based on people who were like, well, my husband has no idea what you're talking about. So there were things like that that we did to try and improve its clarity.
Yeah.
I think about where it's going to go and how big that it can be. There are some standard sizes you can find online for guidelines of how big something should be. And then if you try to put a bunch of stuff on it, it doesn't fit. You have to cut, as well as in the commentary and critiquing process, if people are like, it's too busy. You want to have a lot of space. Definitely, that's a design principle. You don't want to have too many objects together. And always probably cut more than you start with. Sarah?
And actually, I think a lot of that also goes back to what Marie just said about having like a central key message. Like if you actually have one key message, then it will help in not having as much that you might put.
Yeah.
But my question to you is back to working with your communications. I don't know what your relationship is with the communications office and if they have to approve anything like this, but given that you went to them and they had all that critique, because we are going to have to do this in our department and they do have to approve it, would you, if you were to do it again, go to them earlier on in the process, or would you still wait so that you can have it kind of the way you want?
Well, the communications group that critiqued it was internal to us. It wasn't our Department of Labor Industries communications office, but they do need to see it. But they're very good. We have a good relationship with them for the most part.
Yeah, I would say that our Department of Labor Industries communications division has learned from SHARP and I think the overall public health community about doing better communications. So, you know, the idea of actually having social media, whether or not it's a blog or a Twitter account or other things, sort of originated in SHARP and we pushed the agency towards that. So it's we're not in the Department of Health, so we have a very different sort of structure of our communications department. We're very reactive to information needs. So this is another area where generating an infographic, we're sort of pushing them to try to respond. But then they actually always come back with a lot of significant information.